We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lawrence Holmes here with you. Full boat show tonight. We're here until 10 o'clock, and it's legal tampering season or something in the NFL. And when I want to get kind of a wide view of what's going on with the league, there's no one better than Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk, the managing editor. I love when he jumps on because he knows everything that's going on around the NFL. He joins me now here on The Score. Michael, thanks again for jumping on the show. This is crazy. Now that we're into the legal tampering. So for football fans, they're like, what does that mean? What happens when we're in this legal tampering period?
Well, what happens is on Monday and Tuesday, NFL teams are calling player agents and negotiating contracts. They're not allowed to finalize an agreement. They're not allowed to sign a contract. Technically, they're not even allowed to verbally agree on a contract, although everyone knows that does happen all the time. But basically, it is open season on negotiations, and the Bears and all 31 other teams are actively calling player agents, asking how much would it take to get this guy done. Wednesday at 3 our time, Central Time, is the first time that a contract can get signed. And, you know, it won't be surprising if a few teams announce some deals being done at, you know, 3:05 p.m. because they really do get all the parameters worked out during this so-called legal tampering period, even though officially a contract cannot be signed until Wednesday afternoon.
What's the benefit and what's the detriment of this?
Well, the reality is everybody knows that there's already talk going on even before that legal tampering period started today. There was already talk going on. The scouting combine, people know that these conversations happen, and teams are talking to agents, even though the agents are representing a player who is technically still under contract with another team. So the reason the NFL decided to allow at least a short period where it was permissible is that under the old rules, before there was a legal tampering period, really, it was the teams that were following the rules, if there were any, that were being held back, that weren't being allowed to get a head start on free agency. So the reason is just to say, okay, everybody has a chance to talk generally about what contracts will look like, even though nobody can finish a contract, can agree to a contract, or can sign a contract until Wednesday.
Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns. The NFL overall has been real tradey, and I kind of like it. Like it's strange to talk about the NFL in those terms, but I've enjoyed the fact that we're seeing people swap teams and find different spots. What did you think of the weekend that the Cleveland Browns had?
Well, I found it one of the most fascinating things we've ever seen because the new general manager, John Dorsey, inherited what the fired old general manager, Sashi Brown, had been building toward. You know, the Browns were a terrible team 2 years in a row, but the whole plan had been, we're going to clear a lot of cap space, we're going to have a lot of draft picks, and then 2018 is the year we really start to build up a football team that we think we can win with. It turned out that the owner, Jimmy Haslam, didn't have the patience that Sashi Brown was hoping he would have. Sashi Brown got fired, so John Dorsey inherited a great situation where he gets to say, hey, I have all this cap space I can trade for expensive players. I have all these picks that I can use to trade for players. You know, there are a couple of guys. Tyrod Taylor and Jarvis Landry are now actually the two most expensive players under the Browns salary cap for the 2018 season. And that's those are the two players that they traded for. And the reality is a lot of teams wouldn't have traded for those two players because they are highly paid. Their contracts are not great deals. But when you have as much cap space as the Browns have, you might as well spend it on somebody. And so it kind of made sense for the Browns. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see if this all works in Cleveland, because we've seen in other sports teams like the Houston Astros make this their whole strategy of, you know, we're going to trade away whatever good players we have, save money in the short term, get young players, get draft picks, and then build our team. And it worked very well for the Houston Astros. In baseball, we've seen several basketball teams attempt that type of rebuilding. We haven't seen it in the NFL the way the Browns have done it, but it's going to be really interesting to see if John Dorsey succeeds with the situation he inherited from Sashi Brown.
What do you think that means for them as far as the draft goes?
Well, I still believe they will draft a quarterback with either the first overall pick or the fourth overall pick. I don't think they traded for Tyrod Taylor thinking he's their franchise quarterback for years to come. I think they traded for Tyrod Taylor thinking he's a better option than anybody we had for 2018, and then we'll draft a quarterback and play him when he's ready. And I think it's somewhat comparable to what the Bears did. They signed Mike Glennon. That didn't work, but they hope the quarterback they drafted, Mitch Trubisky, will be the answer in the long term. And I think the Browns are doing something similar there. I don't think they view Tyrod Taylor as their franchise quarterback for 2019, 2020, and beyond. I do think he's the most likely week one starting quarterback, and that allows them to bring along the quarterback they draft slowly. And to me, that kind of makes sense. You can compete with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he was in the playoffs with the Bills, but you get a younger quarterback who you see as your long-term answer in the draft. So I kind of like what the Browns have done. We'll see if the quarterback they draft works out, but as a strategy, it makes sense to me.
Last thing on Cleveland, why didn't it work for DeShone Kizer, and do you think that there's still a quarterback in there?
Well, I think that Hugh Jackson did not do a very good job with that team. You know, frankly, I actually thought you could have made a pretty good case that Cleveland fired the wrong person, that they should have given Sashi Brown another year but fired Hugh Jackson and brought in a different coach. But I really think DeShone Kizer does need a change of scenery. I don't think Hugh Jackson did a good job with him. I think that he could be the type of player who develops in a place like Green Bay. And, you know, we've seen it work very well for the Packers when they had Aaron Rodgers developing behind Brett Favre. I don't know that DeShone Kizer is going to be that kind of a player, but I do think he's the kind of player who can develop over time and maybe be a good starting quarterback in the NFL someday. I don't think he was ready as a rookie. I think if you remember at Notre Dame, Brian Kelly openly said he shouldn't be turning pro. He needs another year in college. So, I mean, the coach who knew him best said he's not ready to be an NFL starter in 2017, and he proved that he wasn't. So I think there's a chance that long-term it can work, and I think he's in a better situation for himself now. I think he was the type of player who would have benefited from not being a starter as a rookie. Now he won't be a starter as a second-year player, maybe won't be a starter for quite a while behind Aaron Rodgers, but someday I could see him working out in the NFL.
What's the likelihood that Drew Brees leaves New Orleans?
You know, it is unlikely, but it's not quite as unlikely as people are making it out to be. I mean, a lot of people are just saying he's staying in New Orleans, nothing else is going to happen, no chance of him leaving. I don't really think it's quite that certain, because if it were that certain, he would have signed already. I mean, you know, plenty of teams have gotten plenty of deals done with important players long before the start of free agency. I mean, we saw, for instance, the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. That was a situation where Jimmy Garoppolo wanted to be there. The 49ers really wanted him. They made him a big contract offer. He accepted, and they got him locked up long before the start of free agency. The fact that the Saints have now put themselves in a position where it is completely legal for other teams to call up Drew Brees' agent and make him an offer and talk about the parameters of a contract That tells me that it's not a sure thing. That tells me that they're still working it out, and it's possible that he would leave. And I think any team that needs a quarterback would be crazy not to call Drew Brees right now. You know, the teams that we've seen connected with Kirk Cousins, especially the Jets and Vikings, both have more cap space available than the Saints. They'd be crazy not to call up Drew Brees' agent and just ask, what would it take to get this deal done? You know, what have the Saints offered? We have more cap space than the Saints. We'll top whatever they're offering and see. So I don't think it is a sure thing that he stays in New Orleans, but I do still think it is more likely than not that he stays in New Orleans. I think he's happy there. I don't necessarily think he is just looking for the top dollar offer he can find. So I expect Drew Brees to get a deal done with the Saints sometime before free agency officially begins on Wednesday. But it's not a certainty, and anyone who says it is a certainty, I think, is just wrong.
You bring up a really interesting point, because I think that the common wisdom is that, well, these guys, if a team has cap money, these are going to go to places where people have cap money. And I think that there are other things that go into figuring out where you want your football career to go. From the patterns that you've seen over the last couple years of free agency, what is most important to players?
You know, I think, by and large, money is the first thing they look at, and I don't see many teams getting a great deal on a free agent, you know, offering him half of what he could have gotten elsewhere, you know, offering a guy who could be making $20 million a year, $5 million a year, and he gives that kind of discount. But if the money is close, that's where I think players do start to think about, do I like my head coach? Do I like my position coach? Do I like the city? Do I think we have a good chance of winning a Super Bowl? I think if the money is close, players do start thinking about other things and thinking about their legacy as a player. I think Kirk Cousins is an example of a player who it won't be completely about the money for him, in part because I think in Washington, he never really felt like the team believed in him. You know, I think he, frankly, he always felt like, well, there are some people here who are just upset that it didn't work out with Robert Griffin III. Even long after RG3 was gone, I think Kirk Cousins believed that people like the team president, Bruce Allen, just didn't believe in him, didn't think he was a top echelon quarterback. And so I think Kirk Cousins is an example of a player who it is important to him to know that everybody is on board. The GM is on board. The head coach is on board. The owner is on board. And so I think Kirk Cousins might be a guy who is looking not just for the most money he can possibly make, but for things like the right fit, the right relationship. Also things like a true guarantee, I think, might be more important to Kirk Cousins. He doesn't want to be in a position where he's signing one of these contracts that, you know, the top number you hear is 5 years and $150 million, but it really turns out when you go through the numbers that the team could make it 3 years and $60 million and cut him. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins is going to sign maybe not a 100% fully guaranteed contract, but I think he'll sign a contract that has a higher percentage of it guaranteed than we've seen just about any other player in the NFL get. And I think part of that is he wants to know that, yes, it is locked in, that this team is committed to him, and he doesn't have to be thinking about, hey, if I go through a bad week or a bad several weeks in a row, what happens? Is that team going to be looking to get rid of me and get someone else as their franchise quarterback? I think Kirk Cousins really wants the right fit all around. He'll make a lot of money anywhere he goes, but I don't necessarily know that money is going to be the overriding, the only thing he looks at.
Isn't it a little weird that we're now talking about the Legion of Boom in the past tense over the last 7 days? I mean, you kind of trade away the heart and soul with Richard Sherman after he had gotten injured, and Michael Bennett finds himself gone, and Earl Thomas was making overture to the Cowboys during the season. It's so strange that it feels like that one play in the Super Bowl kind of turned the fortunes of that franchise.
Yeah, it is weird, and I think what it all comes down to is the team has declined. I mean, this was the best team in the league. They won one Super Bowl, as you say. They're down at the one-yard line and could have won a second Super Bowl. And last year they missed out on the playoffs, and they were not as good a team. And when a team is in decline, it's the older and the more expensive players who are on the way out, and that's Richard Sherman and it's Michael Bennett. I think Jimmy Graham is unlikely to re-sign in free agency. Just older and more expensive players, they're the ones who are sent packing when a team says, we're not the team we used to be. They want to get younger and they want to get cheaper. And, you know, that goes back to what I was just saying about Kirk Cousins and wanting a fully guaranteed contract. You know, it's one of these things in the NFL that you look at the contract of a Richard Sherman when he signs in Seattle and it looks great, but the reality is Seattle had that option to cut him and not pay that big salary and let some other team take it. So it's a very interesting thing that has happened in Seattle. I think it's going to be really fun to see. Is Seattle able to improve without doing a complete rebuild? Because I think as long as they still have Pete Carroll as their head coach and they still have Russell Wilson as their quarterback, it's not a complete rebuild the way we've seen from some teams, but it is going to be a significantly different roster than we've seen before, and in a division that's only getting tougher. You know, they went through a couple years where they felt like the Rams and the 49ers were a couple of easy opponents they could face, and that's not the case anymore. The NFC West, I think, is going to be a very competitive division, and I think it's going to be tough for them to actually keep pace with the Rams or the 49ers, let alone be ahead of both of them. It's going to be really fun, I think, to watch what happens in Seattle. And, of course, obviously a lot of fun to watch the first time Richard Sherman lines up against Seattle.
You know, that's right. Michael David Smith, the managing editor of ProFootballTalk.com, is joining me here on The Score. I'm looking at free agency, and there are a lot of people making assumptions about, well, the Bears have cap money, and here are some positions of need that there are people out there that might be interested. When you look at the Bears, what do they need, and what's realistic for them in free agency?
Well, I think the overarching theme for Ryan Pace has to be he has to prove he made the right call last year when he traded up and drafted Mitch Trubisky, or else I don't think he can save his job. I think if the Bears are a last-place team again, I think Ryan Pace is out. And so he needs to start showing progress. And the way to show progress with your young quarterback is to put good receivers around him. So I think the top receivers, guys like Allen Robinson, a top tight end like Jimmy Graham, I think Ryan Pace might be willing to overpay for players like that, big play receivers in particular, because he really wants to prove that Mitchell Trubisky was the right choice a year ago, and the way to prove that is to give him weapons to throw to. So I think that's the big thing. I mean, the Bears actually are in good cap space now, but frankly, they're in good cap space because they got rid of expensive mistakes that Ryan Pace made before, guys like Mike Glennon and Marcus Wheaton and those players. And, you know, you have to be able to not just have the cap space, but use the cap space on players who can contribute. And for Ryan Pace, I really think it's about players who can contribute this year. I think there may be some teams that if they had a roster like the Bears had would say, you know, we need young players and we need to build from the ground up. But I just don't think they're going to have that kind of patience with Ryan Pace to let him keep his job to build up that long. I really think despite that contract extension that he signed, if they're a last place team in the NFC North again, I think they would have to move on from him. So I think he's going to be very motivated to bring in players who can contribute right away as opposed to players who will develop over a few years. And so to me, that's all about, you know, big play receivers, Graham or Robinson, Sammy Watkins, Austin Seferian Jenkins is a name I've heard. I think players who are going to be ready to start and to improve the offense right away are the players the Bears are going to be looking for.
Michael, hang on. There's more stuff that I want to talk to you about, but we have to take a quick time out. We got to do a scoreboard update with Julie. We haven't even talked about Mitchell Trubisky. And you know what? We haven't really talked about the draft. We've got Michael David Smith of ProFootballTalk.com talking NFL, talking Bears with you. We'll continue the conversation after a quick timeout and an update. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to The Score. Julie, thank you very much. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock. We're talking football in the middle of a really good conversation with Michael David Smith of ProFootballTalk.com. Thank you so much. I appreciate you being on board. And we're trying to figure out, now that there's a new head coach around here, you know, what are some of the things that Bears fans can expect in this new regime?
Well, he's a smart offensive coach. I don't think there's any question about that. The offense, I think, is certainly going to be better than it was a year ago. I think it's hard for me to picture it not being a better offense. I think they're going to be better coached. I think there's going to be better play calling. I think you saw with the Chiefs last year when Andy Reid passed over play calling to Matt Nagy, it was a better situation on their offense, and I think he can do some of the same things with Mitch Trubisky and the offense that he has in Chicago. I really think there should be an expectation of immediate improvement. I don't know, when I look at this team, that I say it's a playoff team in year one of Matt Nagy, but it shouldn't be the type of new coach where you can't expect him to be any better than the team he inherited a year ago. I think it's completely fair to expect them to be a better team this year, and especially a better offense. And boy, if they're not a better offense, I think that raises serious questions because, you know, it just everything is built around, I think, Mitch Trubisky having an offense built around him. I think it really has to be better, and if it isn't, that's a big problem.
I consider myself to be still on the fence about Trubisky. There are plenty of fans that love him. I saw a guy that has a lot of arm talent, that's got a lot of athletic ability, but I'm still not sure. Am I lost on this? Am I not seeing what other people see?
No, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Like you said, you know, last year there were individual plays where you saw the talent. And I actually thought the contrast with Mike Glennon was pretty interesting because you didn't see any plays. There was not really ever a time when Mike Glennon was running that offense that you said, yeah, this guy, he looks like an NFL franchise quarterback. There were times with Mitch Trubisky where you did see it, where you saw him make plays with his arm, when you saw him make plays with his legs. But what you didn't see was it happening anywhere near consistently enough. And that's going to be the big question for Matt Nagy is, was the inconsistency just part of being a rookie who's still learning the NFL, a rookie who wasn't practicing with the starters all through camp and who kind of got thrown into a bad situation at the wrong time? Or is that just the kind of player he is and he's just not the type of player who puts together that talent on a consistent basis? I think that's going to be really a fascinating thing to watch heading into the 2018 season, because the talent is there, but I wasn't blown away with the talent last year. You know, it was not a case like Deshaun Watson was in Houston, where just instantly you're saying, wow, this guy is a player in the NFL. It wasn't like that with Trubisky. It was more like one step forward and then two steps back for Trubisky. So I think he has to take a step forward. Or, again, you know, the Bears fans will be very justified in being very unhappy if he's not a lot better and a lot more consistent in his second year than he was in his first year.
I appreciate you spending this much time with me. I just got a couple more questions. The draft season, the scouting season is almost over. We got pro days coming up, and then we got the draft. What was the most interesting thing that you learned about prospects from the time the college season ended to where we are right now?
Well, to me, it was probably Shaquem Griffin, who got so much attention at the combine, and I almost felt like it reached a point where it was a little unfair to him that people kept saying, you know, hey, Shaquem Griffin is really impressive for a guy who only has one hand. And to me, he's kind of reached the point where we don't even really need to talk about that anymore. What we need to talk about is what a complete athlete he is. I mean, he is as fast as his brother, who's a cornerback in Seattle and who the Seahawks, one of the reasons the Seahawks feel comfortable moving on from Richard Sherman is they like his brother Shaquille Griffin as a starting cornerback in the future. You know, he ran as fast a 40 time as his twin brother did, but he also is a bigger and stronger player than his twin brother. I thought that was a really fun thing to watch. Watch him really emerge as one of the top talents, I think, in this draft. I think there are some questions about which position he played, the kind of the hybrid position that he played at UCF, I think matches up better against the kinds of spread offenses that he saw in college than it will match up against NFL offenses. So I think it's legitimate to ask that question, but I think we've moved well past the question of, is this kid an NFL quality player? I think he absolutely is. And I thought that was really interesting to see.
Which of the quarterbacks do you have the most faith will succeed after being drafted?
Well, if I had to name one, it would be Sam Darnold. But I don't necessarily look at this quarterback class as being quite up there with, as anyone being quite up there with, like, an Andrew Luck. He came into the NFL, and there was just no question in my mind, this guy, assuming he stays healthy, in the last couple of years he hasn't, but assuming he stays healthy, there's just no question that Andrew Luck has that kind of franchise talent in the NFL. This draft, to me, is more like half a dozen guys who I think all of them have the potential to be very good NFL starters, but I'm not certain that any one of them will do it. And to me, I say half a dozen because I include Lamar Jackson of Louisville and Baker Mayfield of Oklahoma State. I think those two guys are closer than a lot of people realize to the top four that everybody's been talking about. So to me, it's really like six quarterbacks who all have a lot of promise and all have the potential to be franchise quarterbacks. But I look at them and I don't necessarily say any one is a sure thing. So to me, if I had to put out a draft board right now, Sam Darnold would be my top quarterback. But to me, the 1 through 6 are all pretty close. Nobody's a sure thing, but all of them have the potential to be very good NFL starters.
Michael, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on the show. Whenever you're on, I never feel like it's enough time, but I appreciate the time that you do give the program.
Okay, my pleasure, Lawrence. Good talking to you.
That's Michael Davis Smith, the managing editor of ProFootballTalk.com. More after this on The Score. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Michael David Smith. I try not to put him on too much because, you know, he's doing it for free. So I ask him every few months if he'll come on and talk on the show. And he was nice enough to be on the show today. That segment was brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. I enjoy talking with him, though, because he gives a nice, clean, clear view of what's going on at the NFL. But he's based here in Chicago, so he's paying attention to what's happening with the Bears. So it's nice to hear his... I like that he and I are on the same page about Trubisky. That we're not sold yet. And I think there's so many people that are, including Ryan Pace, which is fine. He's kind of staked his career on Mitchell Trubisky, so I get that he would be sold on what Trubisky is. Trubisky apparently working out in California, trying to get ready for all of the off-season stuff, which will be coming up in a few weeks, getting close to the draft. Switch over to baseball. Jake Arrieta signed a deal with the Phillies. He had his physical and looks like he's good to go. 3 years, $75 million. I'm guessing about half what he thought he would get. Now, the AAV on it is $25 million a year. You can't beat that. But I'm guessing he thought he would get 4 years or 5 years. And probably when the whole cycle of free agency began, he's probably thinking, I'll give 5 years, around $150 million. And it ends up being 3 for $75 million. Arrieta, I know that we talked about it while we were in it, but you look at his Cy Young Award winning season. The numbers are so stupid. A 1.77 ERA in 229 innings. 236 strikeouts in 229 innings. A whip of 0.865. You look at all the categories, and he started 33 games, hit 4 complete games in that season, 3 shutouts, finished 6th in MVP voting, and won a Cy Young Award. I know that we're only talking about 5 seasons, or I guess 4.5 seasons of Jake Arrieta. He is an all-time great Cub. He was the man. The splits in that season for him were so stupid. It doesn't make any sense what he was able to do in the second half of that season. The first half was good too, but the second half of the season was ridiculous. How ridiculous? Okay. The first half of Jake Arrieta's 2015 season, he threw 121 and two-thirds innings. He had an ERA of 2.66, struck out 123, had a whip of 0.986. Okay, right there, we're talking about a Cy Young candidate. Those numbers right there say this is a guy that's in the mix as a Cy Young candidate. Now let's talk about what happened in the second half. 15 starts, an ERA of 0.75, a whip of 0.727. As Uncle Terry would say, that's walking with the immortals type stuff. You look at the months that he put together. In August, opponents, this is so disgusting. The slash line against Jake Arrieta. I mean, it's, oh my God. They had no chance, Vince McMahon, against him. Slash line against Jake Arrieta in the second half of the season, 148, 204, 205.
We're not in safe harbor yet. I just had to dump that. That was disgusting.
Yeah, it is disgusting.
So gross, I had to dump it.
You got to dump that, Shane. The opponent's OPS second half of the season, 409. Do you understand? Like, on base plus slugging against Jake Arrieta, 409 in the second half of the 2015 season. There were incredible starts, including the play-in game against Pittsburgh, where he just... Sean Rodriguez is still punching the water cooler. Still mad. X-Pac over there punching the water cooler. And of course, what Jake was able to do in the no-hitter.
Here's the 1-1. Fly ball, playable. Shallow center. Russell is there. The shortstop gloves it. One down. Now the 0-1. Line towards shallow right center. Fowler is there. He makes the catch. Two down. Boy, when the ball left the bat, that looked dangerous, Ron, but it hung up for Fowler. Two down. Two and two on Suarez. Arrieta has not given up a hit all night. He is ready. And the 2-2. A fly ball. Shallow right. Playable. Zobrist is there. Coming in is Hayward. No hitter for Arrieta. Jake Arrieta pitches a no-hitter here at the Great American Ballpark.
You heard it right here on the score. Pat and Ron on the call. The people who push back and talk about, there's already a text here. He had a great run, but he's not a great Cub. Ferguson Jenkins. That's an all-time great Cub. Yeah. No diss to Fergie, but Fergie gets you a World Series or no? No? Jake did though, right? You're talking about a guy that won the Cy Young in your jersey. A guy that put together the damnedest second half of a season that you've ever seen. You may have heard about Bob Gibson, but you didn't see it. You didn't see them have to lower the mound because Bob Gibson was so dominant. That's what you got with Jake Arrieta in the second half of the 2015 season. You got vintage, open up the bottle, Bob Gibson from Jake Arrieta. You got to watch that. You got to watch Bosio and the Cubs fix a guy. And you could see it coming the year before. That from June of 2014 on, you were like, oh, this is a thing. There was that month, that ridiculous month where he was great, but I think Kershaw threw two no-hitters in the month, or else he would have been, you know, pitcher of the month. And in the World Series season, he still goes out there and gives you almost 200 innings, almost 200 strikeouts, an ERA of 3.1, finishes ninth for Cy Young, hit a couple dingers too. I know that you think that, well, people have to be here for 17 years and stuff and suffer. I will tell you that perhaps you should jump Jake Arrieta to the head of the line. That perhaps it's okay to bestow upon him the greatness that he deserves, the respect that he deserves for what he accomplished in a Cubs uniform. Now, hope that your guys go out there and beat his ass every time that he comes out to the mound. But my goodness. The amount of greatness you got from Jake Arrieta in those four plus seasons, it's incredible. He was an incredible pitcher for you guys, and I think he's an all-time great. And if you don't, too bad. You're wrong. You're wrong. This segment brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Discover the new Tomorrow Hybrid mattress, pillows, bedding, and more by the sleep experts at Serta Simmons Bedding. Visit tomorrowsleep.com and use the code DRIVE for $125 off. Got your tournament brackets? Need help? We've got a couple of experts coming on next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.